Good evening. This is a double Parsha this week. You have Kisisa and Parshas Korach. Actually a lot to say. We'll first start with Parshas Korach. Parshas Korach is the order of the Arba Parshas that we had. This is the third one. We've had Parshas Zohar, and now we Parshas Shkolim, Parshas Zohar, and Parshas Korach. The next one next week will be Parshas HaChodesh. Parshas Korach has to come before Parshas HaChodesh. The order is because we have to bring the Parshas HaChodesh was to prepare yourself to bring the Korban Pesach, which was that you would have to be ritually clean to do that. And before you could get ritually clean, you would need the Parah Adumah to affect that process. And so we read from Parshas Chukas, which also tells us the switching we see at the beginning, even though Aaron is still alive. We don't realize why it starts off the parsha v'lokach Elazar haKohen. It tells us that Elazar already is going to be the Kohen. That tells us, even though Aaron, it doesn't pass away till later in the parsha, but for the obvious reason that Aaron will never be the one. God knows the future, obviously, but Aaron will never be the one to affect anything to do with the paraduma. So he plays no role in the process, and therefore Elazar is the one commanded right away, Aaron's son, to be the one to affect the ritual, and that's what it is. Of course, the big question of Paraduma, it's Metamer Es HaTmeim, Metame Es HaTahorim. In other words, the person that is Tameh, he needs the ashes of the Paraduma to make him pure, to make him ritually pure. But the person who slaughters, the person who administers the ashes, because he has dealt with a carcass of an animal, he becomes Tomei. And why would that be? That's an unexplained question, although the Abarbanel, I think I probably mentioned it in Parshas Chukas, chimes in and he says the reason is it all depends on what one needs for himself. In other words, the person whose tummy needs to get pure so the animal serves a purpose for him. But for the Kohen who administers the ashes of the Paraduma, he doesn't need the ashes for his purity. He's in a state of purity. Therefore, when he touches the ashes, he is touching an animal that is dead, and therefore it makes him tummy. So the fact is, it's the necessity of something that's used that avoids the commandment. That's his opinion. Of course, we are left with this being Chukas HaTorah, one of the mitzvot that has no reason. Moving on to the parsha itself, Kisisa, of course, the focal point of the parsha is the Egel. But before that, it's very interesting. We discuss two things. We discuss Shabbos and also the appointment of Moshe has been given the commandment in Truma and Tetzaveh to build the Mishkan and all the ramifications of it and what its purposes are, the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol, as we discussed last week. But now he says, who will be the architect? And God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to appoint Bezalel. And Moshe has reservations about appointing Bezalel because Beniri ben Chor l'Matei Yehuda, he's from Shevet Yehuda, but who was Bezalel? Bezalel was the son of Hur. It doesn't tell us who Hur was, but Hur was killed in the Maaseh Egel, and of course that led to his son Bezalel being chosen. The problem with that is that Hur was the son of Miriam, and this becomes problematic. Moshe realizes this is doesn't look very good because here he is. He's the one who's the leader. Aaron is the Kohen Gadol. His children are second in command to be the Kohen Gadol. And now he's choosing the chief architect, the 13-year-old boy, which in the minds of all the other people are a little bit strange because they don't understand this, because there are a lot of artisans who had their various jobs in the land of Egypt. When they did that, they all had various crafts that they were experts in. And they take an untried 13-year-old boy to be in charge of all the craftsmen. It sounded a little bit, it wouldn't go over big. And, of course, to allay those fears, he gives them Aliyah, but making no mistake about it. What when it says, God says, He was the only one. God imbued him with the talent to do every kind of work. There are people who are silversmiths. There are people who are goldsmiths. There are people who work with copper. There are people who can do the dyeing and the various other talents that were necessary, the carving for the wood, to be the woodsmiths and various other things that were necessary. Bezalel, he says, was able to do it all. He was a master of all trades. He was not a jack of all trades, but he was a master of everything that was necessary for the Mishkan. And Moshe is a little leery of appointing someone in his family to be the chief architect of the Mishkan. And God says, therefore, Re'u Karasi B'Shem, I will announce it. I will let everybody know. In other words, you won't have to bear the brunt of making this announcement. I will make sure that everybody realizes that the appointment is coming directly from me and from nobody else, and there will be no problem whatsoever to allay any fears of keeping it all in the family, which was a major problem, which is why he gave him Eliyav also, who was a great artisan in his own right, but only in certain crafts, and letting us know Vito, he was only a second in command, and that only that Bezalel would be the one who would be the chief and totally in charge. We get to the next issue at hand is Shabbos. And it's very interesting the way we say, Vishamru v'nei Yisrael es ha-Shabbos, la'asos es ha-Shabbos. We say it every Friday night in the davening. And, of course, la'asos es ha-Shabbos l'dor ha-som. Now, what is the point of mentioning the halachas of Shabbos at this point in time prior to the building of the Mishkan? And, of course, we're told that there were various requirements that were necessary in the building of the Mishkan, the Lamates, Malachos, all the things, all the laws that were required in building. And God wanted Moshe and Klal Yisrael to know that even though it's very important to build a Mishkan, but don't think for 1 minute that it has the ability to violate the Shabbos. Shabbos out trumps everything possible in all walks of life. It trumps every single holiday and every single malacha. Shabbos comes first on the list. Everywhere you turn, nothing can be docha Shabbos except for a chola, somebody who's sick, a pikuach nefesh, somebody who's in dire straits, he's very sick, and then it is hatzolos nefashos, is docha Shabbos. If you have to save a life, of course, it's docha Shabbos, which is very interesting. Because when it uses the word multiple Shabbos, we learn from this that you can violate one Shabbos, so that why you would think maybe the person shouldn't violate Shabbos. But the point is, God doesn't want any dead Jews, and he wants you to violate a Shabbos so that you can be alive the next time to be Mekadesh many Shabbosim, to adhere to and keep many Shabbosim for the rest of your life. The one very interesting thing over here is that there's an Or HaChaim who mentions that there is, and we don't paskin like this, by the way, it's just a very interesting thing only because it is goes against the grain of the way we think of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. He had no stripes against him, so to speak. They're letting him, many Mefarshim said things in their life that caused the stir. And this is, he wasn't famous for this, but of course so many commentaries were concerned about this is what he said. And this was very interesting when he comments over here about it, is that why does it mention many Shabbosos? Is that if somebody is sick, if somebody is in dire straits and he might lose his life, is that person who you are going to violate the Shabbos for his sake to keep him alive? What is his type of person? If he's not a Shomer Shabbos himself, and after you violate the Shabbos to save his life, which would be a wonderful thing to do, he couldn't care less, and he will violate the following weeks. At that point in time, it's his opinion. It's very difficult to come to that thought process, but then why are you saving his life? There's no point, because he's going to violate the next Shabbos. He, kol osev omlacho, you must. The punishment is death, and therefore, why would you want to save him if he's going to violate every Shabbos after that? But of course, that's not the halacha because we are not judge and jury. We can't play God, and therefore we don't do that. But nevertheless, it's just an interesting thought on a sidelight to something that he would say, and it's very strange. And but it's not widely known in general. Now we get to the Egel, and it's a. Oh, excuse me, I just want to get back to the Shabbos for a second. And what is so strange about it is also there's one other factor involved. We know that if one violates the Shabbos and he's brought before Beis Din and the Eidus, he's convicted, it's Skila. But then it says, V'nichras me'amav, he is cut off from his people. And what does that mean? It's one of those rare things that we see two punishments administered for violating the Shabbos. It's not that one is put to death, but V'nichras me'amav, because he has separated himself from his people, meaning what? And the point is, every man's life, this is the Abarbanel, and he makes a very interesting equation over here in saying every Jewish life is composed, the body is composed of a guf, your body, your corporal body itself. You eat, you drink, you sleep, you do all the things in life. But to complement your body, to complete your body, you need this ruchnius and gashmius. So you have the gashmius, but you need the ruchnius to complete the Jewish life. And therefore, it's v'nichras me'amav. When you violate the Shabbos, you're setting, you're cutting yourself off from the Jewish nation. You're no longer part of our group, so to speak. And therefore, God says v'nichras me'amav. And of course, if you're caught, the punishment is skila, which was the most chomer of all the misos bezdin. We move on now to the Egel. And the Egel, of course, is the focal point of the parsha, and Moshe's begging for the thing. The thing that we get that's most interesting right away, Moshe goes up on Har Sinai, and God takes him for whatever it is, however that shapes up. We're not quite clear about that he had an out-of-body experience, or God actually like beamed him up Scotty, so to speak, and he went on a different plane physically as well. Exactly what the parameters of the situation, we're not sure, obviously, we'll never know. But nevertheless, Moshe is with God for 40 days and 40 nights, and then God says to him when he sees Vayaris or Egel u'Mecholos, God hears that going in, he says to Moshe, Lech Reid Ki Shicheis Amcha, they start to worry, and Aaron builds the Egel on their behalf. And of course, it appears to be something supernatural, of course, when it says, Parkun is Me'a Zahav, when he tells the people to take off their ornaments, and Aaron takes it and throws it into the fire, and suddenly out comes the golden calf. It doesn't say that they fashioned, that they somehow, the silversmith took it out of the fire, they waited till it cooled somewhat, and then they fashioned the golden calf, and it just says, Vayetzehu Egel Azeh, and they just threw it into the fire, and out came this golden calf, which seemed to be a miraculous occurrence in itself, and therefore they would have, they assumed at this point that there is something supernatural. But who was it trying to replace? Was the golden calf supposed to replace God? There's a difference of opinion here. Was the purpose of the purpose to replace God, or was the purpose to replace Moshe Rabbeinu himself? And God, Moshe pleads on behalf of Klal Yisrael, and he says, Mecheni no misifracha kosher kosofta. Of course, we don't know what it means, misifracha. It says kosofta, that you already wrote. What does that mean? It's very difficult to understand. Did Moshe see the entire Torah at this point, or only the Torah at this point in time? What it says, of course, the Gemara gets into discuss it, because obviously they're bothered by the tense of the language, kosofta, that you wrote. And therefore, it would sound like the future was already forecast, which of course it is. God doesn't have any, to God there's no time, and that's why a Navi sees things in the present tense, because when he's seeing the future, he's seeing it as if it's happening right before him. And that's why the language is used in a different tense at the time when he doesn't say this will happen. In his eyes, it's happening right then and there. God takes him up to a different plane, and he sees things the way God sees it. God is past, present, future, and one thing. There's no sense of time to God. Everything is happening now. It's the way Einstein began to think towards the end of his life of string theory, and it's a very difficult concept which we can't come to grips with, obviously, and maybe one day we'll find out. But nevertheless, these are the problems that we have. And he takes a look, and God, he pleads with God for the sake of Klal Yisrael, and God says, Lech Nechei Asuam El Asher Dibarti Loch, go and appease the people, I will forgive them. But then Moshe goes down with the Luchos in his hand, and he comes down, Vayares Egal Mucholos, and when he sees this himself, and he sees them dancing around the Egal and worshiping the idol, he loses his temper, and he throws it down, and he smashes the Luchos. What happened at that time? He had already been forgiven. But the point is, according to the Ramban, who says that they were trying to replace Moshe, it makes sense on some reaction there that he was trying to placate God, that it's not so terrible that you have to forgive them because they were replacing God. And now Moshe sees that if they were replacing him and he loses his temper, because what did he do? He was a few hours late. We might think what would have happened had Moshe come down a few hours earlier. Would history have been changed totally? But whatever it is, this was what was meant to be. And therefore Moshe smashes the Luchos because he loses his temper when he sees they are planning to replace him, the idea that Egel is not to replace God but to replace him. And therefore God's attitude towards him. So Moshe, when you thought it was me, you were trying to placate me, but now when you see it's you, I see you lost your temper. Isn't that something? It's a lesson to all of us that how to try to rein in the temper. But of course, at the end of time, when Moshe passes away, God says, thank you for breaking the Luchos. But one very interesting thing is that we see when Moshe has to go up, and God says to Moshe, come up and I'll give you a new pair of luchos. He says, Vayivsol shnei luchos avonim korishonim. A lot of times when something goes wrong in a company, when something happens and there's a major calamity, they go to look at the company rule book, the laws that the company is governed by, and they try to avoid, they look for loopholes and see the problem why this tragedy happened was there were loopholes, and we're going to close the loopholes where this can never happen again. We're going to change the book and say, okay, we're going to rewrite certain things. And God is saying over here, Shnei Luchos Avonim, bring me up new tablets, Korishonim. There's nothing wrong with the first pair. Everything that I told you, the Ten Commandments, the 613 mitzvos, the way I explained it to you the first time, there's nothing to change. Everything is done exactly the way they were supposed to be in the first place. The problem was not with what I wrote. The problem was with the you people are keeping. But of course, we see who was punished for doing it. And it says, who died? Approximately 3,000 people died from the Maisa Egel. And here we are, we have 2 to 3 million people here being punished because 3,000 people went off the derech. And who were these 3,000 people? And the thought process would go, could be there were a certain people from Klal Yisrael that believed it, but nevertheless, when we see the language in the Chumash says, Eile Elohecha Yisrael, what does that mean? Who is Moshe talking? Who is God? Who are these people talking to? Eile Elohecha Yisrael, this is your God. It wouldn't be a Jew saying, Eile Elohecha, this, you Jews, this is your God. It had to be the Erev Rav. And when Moshe, God says to Moshe, Lech Rei, Kishi Ches Amcha, these are the people, the troublemakers are the people that you let go. I never gave you permission to let the Erev Rav go, as we mentioned in Parshas Bishalach, Parshas Bo, when it says, Vegam Erev Rav Olo Itam, you let them go along. I didn't sanction that accompaniment for these renegades, for these rabble-rousers, for these front-runners who decided to leave Egypt because it was laying in waste, and therefore you never should have let them go, but nevertheless, maybe didn't have much of a choice. But the fact is, these are your people. You allowed them to travel along with us, and therefore you see what happens, and they were the ones who said it. But nevertheless, if these are the people, then why should we all be punished? And once again, we know that at the Har Sinai, 40 days previous to this, when at Matan Torah, when they received the Torah, they Vayanu Kolom Yachtov, they all answered in unison, Vayomaru Kol Asher Diber Hashem Naso. We're going to do everything that God said. It's the only time when it was Kol Echad, B'nai Yisrael answered in unison as one voice. 3 million people shouted out, we will do, we will listen to everything that God says. And now there were different factions. They began to have splinter groups. And therefore, when there's a splinter group, God says, this is not what I wanted. And when there are different factions among you, it causes disunity. We need to be unified. And of course, last week when we read the Megillah, that's what we see. Haman realized that he thought that he could get away with it because Mifuzaru Mufarad Bein Hamim, the Jewish people are separated all so many different places. They're all throughout the world. We see in every country in the world, probably there are some Jews somewhere spread out. But here, at least, when we see there are people listening to this Dvar Torah, hopefully from various countries all over the world, but in a short space of time, at least this group of people from various factions in the world, different cities, different takes, they daven in different kinds of shuls. We're all listening, and at this point in time, at least we're unified at this point in time for at least 20 minutes or a half hour for whatever it takes, we're unified together. There's one very interesting out there thought process from Rav Sadia Gaon, who was a very secular educated Jew, but he was a Gaon certainly of great talents, who had been not the regular yeshiva boy. He had been privately tutored in Egypt as a young boy, not sitting in the yeshiva like the other people. And his opinion here on the Vayaris Egel Umecholos, why did Aaron actually, when the Torah lays it in his lap and it says Asher Oso Aaron, at the end of the story, it lays it in the lap of Aaron that he did it. And God knows, as I mentioned last week, that Aaron was taking one for the team. His heart certainly didn't believe in the Egel, and he just did it, but Rav Sadia, and just did it to placate the people at the time to avoid more murder. But he says that Aaron did this for one specific reason. This was basically a sting operation, and he wanted to smoke out the people who were going to see who are the renegades who want something. This man, Moshe, we don't know what happened to him. So who are these people? We want to see who are the people that are going to worship an idol. Who are they going to be? And when he made the Egel, now he would see that these 3,000 people are the ones, and they would be the ones who would be punished, because otherwise, how would we know who would have the immediate punishment at this point in time? And that was Aaron's plan in doing this in the first place. Of course, the thought process is naturally that Aaron thought maybe using these delaying tactics, that to say, go home, have a few drinks, and tomorrow morning you'll get up, and then we'll go forth with the building the Egel or whatever he was planning to do. But he thought maybe they would just get drunk, sleep it off, get up in the morning and sort of forget about it, or just it would the whole idea would dissipate. But of course, Rav Sadia Gaon is alone in this thought process, which is very interesting thought, thinking outside the box, that of course it doesn't make a lot of sense, but necessarily it bears thought to say that he was running this sting operation. Just to keep in mind, because it seems almost impossible to believe that the Jews could sink so low after seeing the feeling the Shekhinah, seeing the Kisei HaKavod, and after only a matter of 6-7 weeks, not to do anything about it, to at least, at the very least, stop the people who want this to be done. Certainly it wasn't all the people. Obviously, it was only a small faction, but that is the greater lesson here is, you know, we've seen it now in all these stories since 9/11. We have this see something, say something, and that is the lesson of the Torah. That is what Hocheach Tochiach Es Amisecha is all about. when you see something, somebody do something wrong, of course you're supposed to do it in a nice way, but bring it to their attention at least so they're aware of the fact that this is not and will not be tolerated. And we know I don't control your life, you don't control mine, I don't control yours, but at least let somebody know exactly how we feel. And if we don't, then we feel like we're part of the problem. If you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem. And these are the things, the difficult parts of life that we have to weigh when we're looking to make decisions and we see what goes on around us. And every day we see new things that are going on. Do we have to express ourselves? Do we have to voice our displeasure? And we have to pick our spots. But we certainly have to let it know, let our fellow Jews know how we feel about it, and not to just bury our heads in the sand and let things go on without voicing an opinion that is according to the Torah that we've learned. Because as we see, the Torah values are certainly a lot more in line with our own values, regardless of the fact of how frum we are. And may this parsha give us the chizuk to act accordingly when the time is right. Have a good night and have a good week.